what's in the proceedings is pretty clear. I got good questions and I got good comments. So it would make sense for me to try to drill down into the details of this in 20 minutes. What I'm going to do is to go through it very quickly at the top level, tell you what we set out to do, what the strategy was, how we think we did. And with 5 minutes to go, come hell or high water, I'm going to stop and shift gears. Because we're working on something now which I've never even heard anybody talk about, not to mention accomplish. And we're having a lot of fun with it, so in the last 5 minutes, I'm going to talk about that. It can only be done in the context of this program, so it's suitable to talk about it.
I'm sure you're curious, you know, that's fine.
But I'm going to go very quickly. I'm going to speak at 80 words a minute with gusts to 100. Okay, what we have is universe of objects. We have a partition, and these elements in the universe have descriptors or parameters. We like to look at those descriptors and then decide which element of the partition the object comes from. So we started with a partition. We're building a fuzzy or probabilistic partition. We have two kinds of parameters, continuous and discrete. In any problem like this, you have to deal with that, decide how you're going to handle the continuous. What we do is we look for overlaps, we chop up the range of the continuous parameters, we make those little windows discrete objects, and we compute their conditional probabilities. With the discrete parameters, it's okay. There are finitely many outcomes. And for a given class of object, they have certain probabilities. So that's the problem. Then we have to combine the continuous and discrete parameters. Our objective is to use Bayes' formula and compute conditional probabilities to be able to say this object probably comes from that cell in the partition. However, in our case, every measurement has a cost. The cost is probably in time, it could be in euros, it could be in liters of satellite fuel or whatever commodity it takes to measure this parameter. And we need to minimize the cost. So what we're going to do is to use Bayes' formula, compute a lot of conditional probabilities, and then we'll use Shannon's entropy. Very quickly, you probably know what Shannon's entropy is, but it's a property of a probability distribution, and it itself has three properties that are important. One is, the more outcomes there are, the higher the entropy. The second property is, the more equal the probabilities are in the probability distribution, the higher the entropy. It's maximal when all the probabilities are equal. The third is as an additivity property. And you can interpret entropy as uncertainty. I mean, same word. The additivity property is if I flip a coin, you have one bit of entropy about whether it's a head or tail. If I flip two coins, there are four outcomes, you have 2 bits of uncertainty. Three coins, 3 bits. So the canonical coin tossing experiment is the basis for the measurement of entropy. And by the way, my name Shannon is the Newton of the information age, and he did all the work in the late 40s. Anyway, for a selected object, what we're going to do is come up with some strategy to say, which parameter should I measure first? I'll go ahead and measure that parameter, and now compute new conditional probabilities. If one of the conditional probabilities exceeds my confidence threshold, they said, well, that's probably the guy. Yeah. It could work to 90%, 99%, whatever. So I want to assign the object with high confidence and with minimal cost. We might as well ask for some other things while we're at it. We'd like it to be self-evaluating because, you know, you go to a customer and say, well, yeah, this will tell you what it is, and you can have some confidence in that. Oh, yeah? Well, why should I really believe that this is going to do as well as it does? Well, because it's self-evaluating. And we can tell you the throughput and the confidence that we're going to have. We can run a simulation online, run 1,000 cases through and see how many fail and why. So, in other words, we'd like to have a fuzziness measure to tell the customer just how good the assignment is. Well, we already talked about that is the formula for Entropy, all logs are base 2. Here's something we're going to use in a little while. The maximal entropy occurs when all the probabilities are equal. In that case, if there are n classes, then the entropy is log to the base 2 of n. So we can compute a percentage or a ratio of the maximal entropy that we have in a particular probability distribution. What we do is compute the entropy and divide it by the potential entropy or the max entropy, and that tells us, relatively speaking, how much uncertainty we've got in the problem. That's going to come up in a little while. There's something called mutual information, and what that is, the formulas are in the paper, but what that is the following, answer the following question. If I measure this parameter to try to identify this object and assign it to its class, how many bits of information, expected value, will it deliver? Since I have initially so many bits of uncertainty, each parameter will deliver so many bits of uncertainty, and that tells me how many, and it's going to help me decide which parameter to use next. Flog through the equation. So, do we have any votes for that? No, probably not. There are 5 possible strategies. One of the strategies is used by the United States Air Force in radar warning receivers. And you might recall that a bright young captain was shot down over Kosovo because his radar warning receiver didn't tell him what to do, because the Air Force is afraid to change the classification strategy in their radar warning receivers. What they do now is they go from the least to greatest cost. Some radar parameters are free because you have it when you know it's a radar. Others you have to go and fetch and calculate. They take a long time. So they'll do the cheap ones and then the expensive ones. Our approach in one case was better by a factor of 17, more efficient by a factor of 17, the United States Air Force approach. Doesn't matter. They want to do it the safe way. The second thing we can do is to look for the greatest mutual information to the least mutual information, the most powerful to the least powerful, use the most powerful one, and the next, the next, the next, the next. And there's a wonderful paper by Goodman and Smith, S-M-Y-T-H, in which they do just that. And they come up with the results that are demonstrably good. However, you can do it a little better. You can divide the information you get by the cost and look at the rate of production in information per second. The fourth bullet down, you can do a little better than that. You can reinitialize at each node. You do it originally, pick the first parameter, but then after you've done 3 or 4, you look at the conditional probabilities, initialize again, and pick the next best parameter. Since they're not independent, that original order doesn't hold. But the last thing you can do is to upfront look at all subsets of the parameters you've got available and see which ones get you to the confidence level you need. That problem is NP complete. The fourth approach is what we use, and it's difficult, but we have not been defeated by scaling up yet in any particular problem. So we need a database of continuous parameters and discrete parameters. We need their a priori probability distribution. We have to know how much it costs to make measurements and what kind of confidence level do you want, Mr. Customer. And we have turned down projects. I had a customer who gave me a problem with 3,000 classes of objects in there. Well, that's about 11 or 12 bits of uncertainty. I said, okay, what are the parameters you're giving me to measure? And he said, well, I'll give you 3. And I looked at them, and each one gave you 2, 2.5, 3 bits of uncertainty, maybe. So even if they were independent, I could subtract 9 bits of uncertainty from 11 bits of uncertainty, it's 2 bits of uncertainty, maybe a 25% shot of getting the right answer. He was already doing better than that. He was looking for 90 or 95%. I said, sorry, I'm not going to take your money. With a project I simply cannot do. So we do an information budget. There's an example, that's in the paper. You can see a specific problem that we tried to do. The first thing we do is we build a database, and you'll notice in the paper that we apply Bayes' formula twice and make a substitution so that what's in the database is the probability of a certain parameter measurement given we have an object from a certain class in the partition. We know that. We know the statistical distribution of the of each parameter for each class of objects. So by doing a little manipulation there, that's what our database consists of, and we do a lot of looking things up instead of a lot of very complicated sorts. So we put the database together. Here is an example of a problem which initially, based on the initial probability distribution, had 2.8 bits of uncertainty or entropy. I had 7 parameters to work with. There are the times it takes to work. Well, parameter 1 takes a tenth of a second, gives me 1.04 bits. And if I look at the ratio of bits to time, parameter 4 is my best one. So I'm going to instruct the program to go immediately to parameter 4, measure it, compute conditional probabilities, and then see what's the next best thing to do. So we look at that information budget right up front. For the problem that I'm not showing you, which is in the paper, we work to 0.9 confidence. And we had residual entropy of 1/20th of a bit, 0.05 bits of uncertainty when we were done. This would be interesting if you were doing the same problem every day, and how many bits have I got left, how many bits per second is the program delivered, and so on. I could go down to confidence of only 0.6, and then a lot more uncertainty left, as you see, almost half a bit. So we're going to select the best parameter for each node, for each unused parameter, as we build the tree, and we expand the node, and at each node of the decision tree, there are a lot of statistics. What have we looked at so far? How much entropy remains? What parameters remain? What are the conditional probabilities? Everything is maintained at each node. The downside of that is it takes a computation. The upside is we can do a lot of diagnostics. We have a lot of probabilities there. So when we expand the node, we put on there the conditional probabilities of how much time have we used up so far, how much entropy remains to be dispensed with, and the a priori probability of that combination of outcomes we're looking at. So we make a report of the input parameter values that we were looking at, which parameters did not have to be used, all the conditional probabilities, the total cost, how much entropy is left, and the result. Did we find a classification and name that object, or did we fail and not reach the confidence level required, or is it not in the database and we have to call it unknown? That's always a possibility. Okay, and we're going to give a report card. Once we've done the global design, we're going to go to the user and say, this is how good this system is. This is how many bits per second of information it generates. Well, you'd have to be an everyday user to have that mean anything to you. But this is the probability that I get a non-failure, that I'm able to make a call. This is the probability that if I make a call, it's correct. This is the average response time. This is how many possible combinations there were that is nodes in the decision tree. And finally, this is how many nodes I had to use. I don't know how much time I'm using, right?
You've got 10 minutes.
I'm going to digress for 30 seconds. We did a problem on indications and warning in a military setting. And several of us sat down. We've been working in this business forever. And we made a database as to what an adversary might be showing you and what his intentions were. So the three databases we built look pretty similar to us with the same items in there. They look very good. We saw no reason why the three problems should be different. The first problem, there are hundreds of thousands of combinations of parameters. We needed to use a decision tree with 1,000. The second problem, again, hundreds of thousands, but we got away with 100 nodes in the decision tree. That was surprising. The third problem, we needed 12 nodes in the decision tree. And right there, something clicked, and I decided that the question of intuition and decision-making was really, really interesting. Because we were three pretty experienced guys, and our intuition said, they're about the same, and no, they were not even close to being the same. So we investigated that, and we published quite a bit on that particular subject. So here's an example of a report card, and the problem that's in the paper. It generated 8 bits of information per second. 98% non-failure, that means we're going to get an answer. And in this case, if we get an answer, it's right. It never gives a wrong answer. There are over 102,000 possible combinations, and we used 111 of them in this particular problem. That's a notional problem, so not necessarily illustrative of what we might run into. But what do we use it for? I mentioned indications and warning. The classical use, I think, for this is a radar warning receiver. A radar has different parameters. They help to tell you what the name of the radar is, and each one takes a different time to measure. And it's critical that you make this determination as quickly as possible, because defensive countermeasures have to be incorporated on time. The other one, diagnostics, is an Army electronic system, which is ancient. There, and the built-in test is 108 binary tests going through the system. Well, if you have to look at 2 to the 108th power possible results, I don't think Archimedes would like that a bit. That's a little bit excessive. But they did collapse to about 50 or 60, and instead of giving the poor soldier a stack of papers with zeros and ones now, we gave him a laptop and a display, and the faulty box turns red. So we're very happy about that, the result of that. Okay, now I'm going to completely shift gears and launch into something else. What happens if you're working the problem, you're trying to identify something, and you have a current state of the problem based on what you've observed, a set of conditional probabilities? Now I pick another parameter. I still got some uncertainty left. I'm not done. I pick another parameter, and I measure it, and I compute conditional probabilities based on that parameter alone and compare it to the current state of the problem. What if they appear to be in conflict and appear to be indicating two different answers? Well, unusual events do happen. It could be that one parameter is at the far end of its distribution, but that's possible. But I would really like to ask the question, and I don't know anybody who's asked this question before, what is the mathematical signature of corrupted data or deception? What would make me think that there's something wrong with that piece of data rather than just being an accidental occurrence? Well, I played with that for a long time. I like to play with numbers and see what jumps out at me. And one of the things I found, when I have a little bit of entropy still in the problem, I would get what I regarded as a lot of false positives. So I decided, if you have a certain amount of uncertainty in the problem, the probabilities are going to be a little unstable, and it's much more likely that you'll get an apparent difference when you compute a coefficient of alienation than if you had less. So I asked myself, how do I get rid of the uncertainty, the entropy? How do I throw it out? Does anybody have an idea about a system which kind of looks like probabilities, but within which you can throw out the don't know factor, the ignorance factor? Anybody got an idea? It's called the Schaefer-Dempster Mathematical Theory of Evidence and Belief. What it does is it has an explicit don't know factor. And it subtracts it from one, and what remains is the amount of belief assignment you're allowed to have. So what we did is, from the probabilities, we subtracted out the entropy, the percent of max entropy from one, and took the rest and distributed it in what's called a belief assignment, according to Schaefer-Dempster, proportional for the probabilities, but their sum could be much less than one. Now we find that Chafer-Dempster would compute the same coefficient of alienation, or the difference between the two probability distributions, or belief assignments. We found Chafer-Dempster give us much more modest solutions, and we sometimes find a poor correlation between Chafer-Dempster and what we get for probabilities. Chafer-Dempster is much less brittle, and it gave us solution answers in which we had a lot more confidence. We did all kinds of simulations again, and looked at numbers, and the numbers keep coming out at us, that the Chafer-Dempster is a much more forgiving environment in which to look at conflict between probabilities or beliefs. There are a couple problems in Chafer-Dempster. One is that you compute belief from a number called evidence. The evidence is from 0 to infinity, belief is between 0 and 1. We don't even bother with that. We go directly from probabilities to beliefs. And another problem is, how do you compound beliefs? Well, we know how to compound probabilities. We do that all the time. But there's something called Dempster's rule for compounding beliefs, and it's quite a bit different. I mean, I try to run the two systems in parallel, probabilities and beliefs. It doesn't work too well. If you get a zero probability, that means impossible. If you get a zero belief, it means I haven't seen any evidence for it yet, but it might show up. So you don't preserve operations. But when you go to Chafer-Dempster, you explicitly account for ignorance, and you can throw it out, where you said those things. That's how we get belief from evidence, and we use Chafer-Dempster's rule. This is bad, I don't know. We use Dempster's rule of combinations to compound beliefs. And there, we talked at the very highest level about the program as described in the proceedings. And we've jumped ahead to something we're working on right now. I personally have never heard anybody talk about the mathematical signature of evidence. And if you have, I hope you would tell me so, but I can go and find it somewhere. It seems like something's not feasible to do. But here, in the context of this program, it does seem feasible to us. Now, we anticipate a user would say, well, okay, run the problem, and at each step, I want you to compute a coefficient of alienation for the next parameter. Tell me if it doesn't look right to you. Give me a post report when you give me your conclusion. And then I, as a human being, will go back and look to see if there's some difficulty with that data. We can do too badly. I guess we have time for a question or two. By the way, I want to thank John White and his reviewers for good comments and even better questions. Yes?
Could you talk a bit about the applicability of this or similar algorithms to recommendation engines or suggestion?
To what?
To recommendation engines, as in like recommending a book or something you might be interested in?
Yeah, if my universe is a set of recommendations, Amazon.com very likely uses something like this. They've seen what you looked at before and make recommendations. Yeah. If your universe is a set of recommendations, then whatever parameters describe my readers out there, I just did some Excel sorts, and there it is. This program is very dumb about what domain you're working on. It doesn't matter what's in the universe.
To what degree do you have to set up those conditional probabilities prior to running the algorithm? Can the system learn the conditional probabilities?
Normally, we will do Excel sorts, or there may be a formal database, which already has that built in. And yes, we could put a learning module, because all it is something we sort, so we could be continuously updating that. But we don't have a learning module per se.
I understand you deliver a decision tree to a customer.
Yes.
What's, for a customer, the difference between a C4.1, 4.5 tree, for example, and the old tree?
Between what kind of tree?
A C4.5 tree, a decision tree algorithm called C4.5.
I don't know. By the way, there's a lot of statistics at every node in the tree. We strip those away before we give it to the customer. And we say, if you see this, it's this. Say that's
what. Other questions?
Yeah, you said in your aside that you had this customer you wouldn't deal with because they were doing better than you could do. How is it possible for them, if there was only so many bits of information, for them to be classifying better than that?
He must have had a trapdoor. Maybe there were many, many hundreds of radars which could be eliminated by one parameter. I don't know, but I wasn't about to try. He claimed he was at about 70%. I was skeptical.
In other words, the customer's always right.
I did not want to take his money unless I was confident.
Right. That's all we have time for. Thank you very much.